Get ready to whiten those knuckles and hold fast as we talk the most dangerous, daring, and epic sea stories ever told.
Whether facing ruthless men who prey on other mariners, or storms that turn calm seas into graveyards, those who go down to the sea and cast off lines enter the most challenging and dangerous environment on Earth.
Only here will you hear their stories and the lessons gained through their experience. I'm your host, Phil.
And I'm Bill.
And we welcome you aboard They Had to Go Out podcast. Before we dive into this episode, we need to provide a disclaimer. The views expressed on this podcast are those of the individuals involved and are not to be construed as official or reflecting the views of any government agency or military service. This podcast is an independent effort with no government association.
When the most is expected, the brave men and women of the U.S. Coast Guard are always ready. The National Coast Guard Museum will engage, educate, and inspire visitors by honoring the courage and skill of our nation's unsung armed service. The museum will explore the Coast Guard's rich history and current impact through interactive exhibits, STEM-based learning experiences, and leadership development programming. Find out how you can join the effort. Become a plank owner today. Visit CoastGuardMuseum.org/out. That's CoastGuardMuseum.org/OUT.
One to check out is the Always Ready Collective, delivering art by and for daring fighters of the sea with their maritime-focused tattoo flash, pinups, and propaganda. Visit them on Facebook, Etsy, Instagram, and at alwaysreadycollective.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Had to Go Out podcast. Thanks everybody for listening. Thanks for liking, subscribing, commenting, sharing, doing all that wonderful social media stuff that gets the word out and gets us more listeners and more donors to the National Coast Guard Museum. We appreciate it.
Yeah, everybody, welcome. Glad you're here. If it's your first time, we're glad to have you. We know we've got a good one in store today. We're going to have a lot of fun on this one. After you like what you hear, go back, listen to some other ones. You can find us on any podcast platform. Find us on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, anywhere you can go on the computer, we're there.
Yeah, hey, like Bill said, we've got a good one for you today. They, you know, sometimes it's somebody that we wanted to have on the podcast for a long time because we worked for this guy. Probably one of the best bosses that I've had in the Coast Guard, and I'm sure a lot of people share that same sentiment with me. And once you hear his name, I think you guys are going to get stoked if you didn't read it already. Who we have on the line, former commander Steve Love, retired. Born Staten Island, New York. His father was stationed at Governor's Island, so he's a legacy coastie. Raised in Maryland for most of his youth. Ended up in Juneau, Alaska at one of his dad's assignments and joined the Coast Guard in 1984, coming in with recruit company X-Ray 118 out of Cape May, New Jersey. From there, he went to the Coast Guard Cutter Cherokee out of Little Creek. It was an old World War II fast attack tug, he calls it. From there to ETA school at Governor's Island, then to Group Eastern Shore in Chicoutimi. From there to the Cowslip, a buoy tender, 180 buoy tender out of Portsmouth. From there to Station Panama City, Florida. Then turned to the dark side, went to OCS in Yorktown. You know, as he goes to the dark side, he remembered his boot camp company, but could not remember his OCS class number, which is telling, I guess. But from there to Group Mayport as his first assignment as an O. And then had to do a tour of becoming an electrical engineer at Old Dominion University in Virginia. From there, his payback was Maintenance and Logistics Command Atlantic. Probably, maybe could have been his most exciting tour. It sounds like his most boring, but yeah, I'm sure he can tell us. From there, CO of Station Cape May, New Jersey, which included Station Smalls, Fortescue, Townsend Inlet, and Roosevelt Inlet. From there to the Office of Boat Forces, working on the acquisition side. Then as the commanding officer of Maritime Force Protection Unit, Kings Bay, and rounded out his career at Yorktown's Boat Forces and Cutter Operations as the head of that branch, the branch chief, where both Bill and I worked for him, and we're lucky enough to watch him retire after 34 years of service in 2018. With that, Commander, welcome to the show, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate the intro and all, and you all very flattering. Thank you.
Yeah, no, Commander, we're glad to have you. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. But so with that intro, what is your most dangerous, daring, or epic sea story or stories?
I would have to say right when I came out of boot camp, getting on the Cherokee, kind of being naive to the Coast Guard and just getting on board. The Cherokee was on the Northern Patrol, and I'm just getting right into it, guys. All right. I mean, if you...
No, for sure.
Go for it, Corner. That's perfect.
Yeah, just jump in and ask a question, but or add to it, you know. And I'm trying to be quick too. I don't want to make this go all night.
The World Series is on in the background. That's why he's saying that. Everyone, just so you know, he used to be a little league coach for one of the players. So we've already heard about it.
And Brandon Lau, come on now. So anyways, on the Cherokee, so we, you know, did the Northern Patrol, and when I came out of boot camp, they hadn't come back yet, and it's down in Little Creek is where they were homeported, and then, so I had to spend a couple weeks over at Portsmouth waiting for them to get back in. But when they did get back in, what happened was they turned around and had to go on an operation called Wagon Wheel, and so they pretty much just, you know, took on stores, and then I remember us having to do some weight tests and things, and just make sure everything was in order. And then we got on the way to go south on Wagon Wheel. And although back then, you know, I was a boot camper, as they called them back then. And it was I wasn't given much information. You know, I'm trying to break in. The world was new. And I was, you know, all the things that come with that. And I'm sure most of you coasties know what I'm talking about.
Keys
come in.
Keys to the sea chest. I mean, did they ask you to find?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I don't know if you need. You know, I don't want to tell too many of those. I mean, some would call
it
hazing nowadays.
Right.
It would. Right.
Team building.
You know, I had to. Oh man, I can't tell you. Even some of the officers that are big wigs in the Coast Guard were on there, and we pulled some good tricks, you know, with Oscar throwing them, you know, like I fell off the flying bridge, but it was really Oscar, you know, stuff like that. You just, you know, I don't mean to, but we had fun because you're out of sea for a long time, right? So, so we get underway, but we were heading down south, and a lot of things happened on that trip, which, you know, sometimes you go on a patrol and it doesn't seem like much happens, right? You get to do whatever, 30, 35 days, or if you're on a high endurance cutter, even longer. But on this one, we had a 5-ton drug bust. We were rescuing boats. We rescued Haitians, over 300, and brought them back to Haiti. I mean, it was a lot of stuff that went on. So for a young guy coming in, you know, I wasn't just breaking in at Helmsman and Lookout. You know what I mean? It was a lot of stuff going on. So it was a very thrilling trip. And but the one evening, and we were looking for, and I didn't know it at the time, but I had the mids, and we were looking for a vessel, and I think we were coming out of Miami because we had just made a drug bust, and then we were heading out, and I think it was around Thanksgiving. It seemed like it was November time frame, and we were out, and the seas were pretty good. And I know the winds were like right around hurricane strength, you know, just the beginning of hurricane strength winds.
That's a good way to tee up a sea story, sir.
Yeah. How'd that fast attack tug ride in the seas?
So it was the fast attack tug. I think it was 165. It was the, you know, the, it was from the Navy, World War II vessel, and, you know, it rolled. The hull was just...
rode like a tugboat?
It was a big... think of a tugboat, but twice the size. You know, I mean, it was a 205-foot tugboat.
Okay. And so it just bobbed like a cork, huh?
Yes, and they told me it could... because it could fill up full of fuel to sail around the world four times. is what somebody told me. Yeah, so I don't know if that's true, but that's what I was told. So when we got underway, instantly I was sick the first day. I mean, they made me hang the lines in the bosun hole and the paint locker, and, I was fighting it the whole time. And my break-in was like this guy named Bones Christiani. I don't know if I'm allowed to say too many names, but and my BMO was Hank Straley. A lot of you guys, rest in peace, Hank. But he was Master Chief of an 87, several boats, bosun mate. But those guys were on there with me and trying to break this young lad on. And I was like a boot camper. And even sometimes, maybe I was a knucklehead. Sometimes they called me Super Boot even. So so I just remember the one night to get to the – we're looking for the sailboat, I believe. But they didn't really tell me that. I'm just supposed to look out for a boat, while I'm on lookout. But the first part of the watch, and it was pretty rough out. I was getting pounced around. And those berthing areas back then, thank goodness I couldn't roll out of my rack because literally I couldn't have my boot straight up. I was on top of the ceiling where all the wires were running. But they got me out of the rack. We went up there to the bridge, and I got to stand, if you stand a four-hour watch, you all know this, you stand one down below at the helm, I'm breaking in, I got Bones trying to teach me how to do this. And then the other part, the next hour you're up on the flying bridge, and then you're back down on the helm for, and then you're on the flying bridge. So I'm start off on the helm, and we're rocking and rolling, and here we go. So I'm trying to, you're supposed to be on course here, but the vessel, the seas were so bad that I couldn't. I was 50 degrees off course,
and I was that's 50 degrees.
50 degrees off course. We're out in the middle of the Atlantic, right? And I'm correcting with 30 degrees left rudder. So I'm literally saying it for a whole hour. It's like just a repeat of
My rudder's left 30 degrees.
Right. off 50 degrees to the right, corrected with 30 degrees left rudder stroke. And I'm calling that out and I was just saying it over and over, every 30 seconds. So
did the OD ever just tell you, okay, shut up, I got it?
Yeah, I think he relaxed it to, I had, every 5 minutes or something, right? because we were just getting pounded. Every time I felt like we were going to come around, the wave would hit us, and then it was. Right. So, and if you want to picture this vessel, the sister ship is the Tamaroa. So if you ever watched the movie The Perfect Storm,
I've seen Tamaroa.
There's some video of that. And so think of that condition that was going on in that perfect storm. So that gives you some visual. Well, right. That's kind of how this was going. But I was on the mid watch. So, you get there at 11:30. And then, so I'm on the first watch. And then it starts getting really rough. And to where I'm taking rolls in this huge, tug to where. And I've got the big wooden wheel. So I'm on the wooden wheel here and trying to keep it left. And we take a roll and I'm holding on to the wheel where I'm stretched out like I'm getting ready to do pull-ups, right? Yep. And everybody rolls from one side of the bridge all the way to the port side. And then so they're all down there. But then, of course, you got to come back, right? So I kind of just wiggle my way, and then I'm holding on, my feet draped, and they all come rolling back to the other side, to the starboard side. I mean, that's how we were taking big rolls.
And, did they kick you off the helm at any point?
No. There's nothing I could do.
That's what I'm saying, sir. I mean, I believe how bad it was then, because, usually if it's just the break-in doesn't know what they're doing, you're like, okay, get off. We'll try again later. But it must have been bad.
Yeah, I had it full left rudder. Wasn't doing any steering. I was just holding on, right?
That's crazy.
And so we're hit there. And at one point, we got hit by a big, a big wave or a flush of water and it hit the window. And I was just looking at the compass the whole time, pretty much, and trying to stay on my feet. And And I looked up and I said, what was that? And the lieutenant who was the OD, he looked over at me with this like face and he said, that was a wave. and I go, wow. And they're like, that's cool. Like, you know, and he goes, cool. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, here, I was excited. I mean, this was like, what, I've only been in on the cutter for about a week or something or less. And I'm, you know, or maybe it was a few weeks, but this is all new to me, right? I'm still breaking in and thinking, nah, this is wild, you know? And I believed in that cutter that, you know, that nothing was going to hurt us. You know what I mean? That kind of thing.
Right.
I mean, that's a faith of youth right there.
Right. So, okay. So we finished that watch, that part of the watch. And then I got to go up topside. So here, Bones Christiani, Bones, we call him. He takes, you know, he goes up there and he's got the boot. But when we get out on deck, like, we can't even stand up. Like, I climb up on the flying bridge and we had to crawl up forward, like on our hands and knees. And the winds, it's raining and the winds. Oh, and when we went up there, they gave us these goggles, like you wore in shop class goggles, you know, with the, that you wear if you're grinding or something, with the little holes on the sides.
Yeah.
So you can barely see out there because they're all scratched up usually. And so I got these goggles on and my rain gear, and I'm kind of scurrying up to the forward. Well, they have a Dodger, you know, it says, you know, USC, GC, Cherokee, across the, you know, the, it's a canvas Dodger, and the railing is only like 2 feet tall, like or not, you know, 2 sections tall, and it's about maybe 3 feet. There's enough where I'm on my knees, I can look over the front of it, right? And then you had the voice tube there, and the brass voice tube. And so Bones and I were just pretty much on the front of this, looking over, and we're supposed to be looking out for a vessel. and when the boat would hit a wave, it would shake. So we would hit and it would go. And it was really dark out in the rain. You could barely see, especially these goggles. I'd have to lift them up every once in a while just to look around. And the vessel would just shake. It just, the only way I could say is like, woo, 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 right?
Yeah, like the shutter of a 47 kind of thing. That woom, woom,
yeah, you could feel the whole spine of this thing.
Yeah.
Like, you could tell it's flexing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all shaking. And this is a 205-foot ship. We're up like, gosh, it feels like 5 stories high. But we would count, and you'd go like 1,001, 1,002, duck. And then we would duck. And then it was like a wave just blew right over our heads. And then we would then look up and then look around. Like, you know, and we did that for a whole, like, kind of like an hour. Like, we were going for a whole hour. And so we're just doing this, and it's getting long, and you know, you look at it, and I had this, like, I don't know if for you that have an Iron Man watch or something, but you know, you have to press the button to turn the light on so you can even see what the time is on it. So I'm trying to, you know, Bones goes, what time is it? You know, we got to be getting back down, you know, to stand in helm watch. And I'm like, I don't know. Let me look here. And so I put my arm around the voice tube and I tried to push the button. And right then we took one of those rolls and I slid all the way out the back. Like we got, it just, you know, it was all wet deck. So I slid and I'm trying to hold on to the ground, but I just slid all the way past the mast and out the back. And then the railing in the back didn't have a canvas, you know, protected, you know, like the banner there, it was just open. So it's like two poles, you know, you've seen,
right,
like Coast Guard cutters with white poles and they're small. And then there's like a little ledge there, but my legs went out and then I just threw my arm up and caught in my armpit, the rail. So, you know, it's like, you know, I'm looking over at the ocean, you know, and I pull up and then Bones comes scrambling down on, you know, like, you know, he's on his hands and knees and, you know, he's helping me out, pulling me back. And he's like, oh, it shook up. I thought it was pretty cool. You know, I mean, it's like, you know what I mean? You're a boot camper. You don't know any better. Right. You know, and I just slid down and I just threw my arm up. And so we scrambled back to the front and then he gets on the voice tube and goes, we almost lost the boot overboard, you know? And so they were like, what? And he says, well, you know, come on down. We got to get you down here. So, Straley came up, told us to come down, and So we did it, and he said, well, we need a what? We need a lookout. We got to see. So they took us back up there, and they tied us to the mast. Jesus, no lie. And the bell of the Cherokee is right there. I didn't even mention this before, but through the whole watch, it's just ringing because it's so rough. It's like, you know. So yeah. Bones is tied up looking like starboard, and I'm looking port. And we're tied. They did the line around our chest and, you know, our waist. They tied us to the mast. And that's how we stood the rest of our watch on that first lookout watch.
That's the most old guard story I've ever heard, actually.
It was like pretty old guard.
They legit tied you to the mast.
We got to be able to see.
You know, I mean, look back now. Was it a joke? But I don't really think so, because it was crazy. You know what I mean? It was a lot of stuff going on that night. And so finally, Straley comes out, he gets us, he unties us, and he brings us down. And then I got to stand another hour of helm. And then the next lookout, they just said, you know what, we're not going to do that. We'll let you stay on the bridge wings, you know, for the rest of this watch, you know, keep you there. And
right, you know, let's not have anybody die today.
right. So it was pretty so then we did the rest of the watch. Well, then I got to go to sleep, but, you know, I didn't think about it. And then the next morning, sure enough, next day, I mean, sometimes, you know, woken up, we got, you know, they call the detail. We come up on the sailboat, and they weren't even sure if the guy was, I mean, the seas would calm down a bit, but it was still rough. And the guys, there's the sailboat, but we couldn't see if the guy was even in it. And then, but what had happened was, it was so rough out, he just laid on the deck the whole time so he wouldn't get washed overboard. And he was there, and we just stayed with him until we couldn't. We were going to launch our small boat, but we couldn't even get the small boat launched. So we stayed with him until an 80 had to come out and get him and bring him in. And because if we got too close with the cutter, or if we small boat, you know, there's a lot of risk there. And and the poor 82 had to fight through that weather, even though it calmed down a bit. It still was it was pretty rough. So I felt sorry for those guys on the 82 that came out. But yeah, that was, and that, I mean, I guess that's the end of that, of that. But that night, yeah, I almost got washed overboard. So I'd have to say that was, but I didn't even know how bad it was. You know what I mean? It was just all in a moment. And you look back, it was a lot of fun for me at the time. But yeah, so that was that was kind of how that one went.
That's a pretty epic story, sir. Like, seriously, I've never heard of somebody actually getting lashed to the mast.
Get tied up, yeah. Yeah, and the bell, I think the bell is up at Cape May now. So, I have fond memories of that bell because, you know, I was a boot camper. I had to shine it every day. And just to throw a little story in there, one of the engineers, he pulled a trick on me and gave me acid to put on there because no matter how much you shine that bell, you couldn't get, it was still kind of like a dark copper look, you know, you couldn't get it really. He gave me this acid, and it was popping, right? And I was so proud of myself. And then the QMC came down, and he's like, what'd you do to the bell? And I said, man, it looks great, doesn't it? Yeah, you know, Chief, it looks great. And he's like, you better go up there and look at it, because you just ruined the bell. It was greener than green you've ever seen. And I had to shine that thing like four times a day to get it back to where it was. You know, for like a month. But anyways, I don't know if that would bore anybody, but
no, that was an awesome story, sir. I'd be curious, sir, what did your dad say to you when you joined? Because I mean, you're a legacy. What advice did he give you before you shipped off that first day?
When I left Alaska, so he was up there. He was command enlisted advisor up there at the 17th district. I don't know. He gave me the Blue Jackets manual and said, you got to read this thing. He said, make sure you know all of it. And believe it or not, it did help me out in boot camp. Because the only thing that was tripping me up was like the warrant officer insignias. because it was a great book to read, and actually, you know, had a lot of good stuff in it just to even teach you how to be, you know, a good person and your grooming standards and all that other stuff, you know, sitting there. But yeah, that's what he did to set me up right. He was, I mean, he was proud of me, I'm sure. He'll probably end up listening to this one day. And but yeah, he bought me a suitcase and he said, here you go. And I was off and running. But he was on the Cholula, so back in the day. So he was on the same kind of cutter. Although when I left for boot camp, I didn't know what cutter I was going to be on.
But,
he's been there for me, influential all the way through my career. And I got to meet so many other chiefs and master chiefs that all took care of me and looked out for me all through the career. And so it's been a blessing. So, I know a lot of them will probably be listening to you here. So I mean, I don't want to name one because then I'd have to name them all.
Fair enough, sir. Well, let's go down the list, sir. So we'll go to the cutters. You can tell us too. I think you're our first ET. What's an ET do in the Coast Guard?
Back when I was an ET, we worked on radars and, you know, all the radios, ERT 9s, UHF, EHF, LORAN. I wasn't a LORAN animal though. I didn't go out to Loran Station, but I did work on the fathometers. Back then you kind of did everything, you know, the teletype, the 1MC, you had to do it. The radar. I mean, that's pretty much then. Now it's more specialized, I guess, and then became more black box kind of thing where you just replace the part.
Everything's plug and play now.
Yeah, plug and play.
Did you ever get shocked, sir?
Yes.
Yeah. What's that story?
Eastern Shore. He's still around. The Cap Wagner. He was the CO of the vessel. It was in Chincoteague. I'm trying to remember the vessel. Was it 82? But he was there. Watching us as I'm trying to repair it. I had to stick my arm between, they got the new crypto gear and the fuse is all the way in the back. And I was trying to get to it. And I put my arm between the crypto gear because it's all locked up with that extra metal and everything. And my arm is like stuck there as I'm like getting tweaked. And so I was like, and he's looking at me like, what are you doing? Captain Wagner. You know what? Matter of fact, this will tie in good with the museum because I think Captain Wagner's parents were like the president of the alumni up there at the academy at one time. So I think so, back in the day. So, but back then he was like a JG on that vessel, but. Yeah, I hate to throw names out there, but anyways, hopefully I'm not embarrassing him. But
you're the one that got shot. Yeah. You're just talking about the JG staring at the new A school kid.
Yeah, I was thinking I was like a knucklehead, but we still he's in my fantasy football league even. So and thinking that was like what 4 years ago almost that we were together, but
small world.
But I can give you another one right after that. Sure, the next cutter,
the cowslip.
Yep. And then
we've got a lot more of this episode to go, and we'll get right back to it after this short ad from our sponsor.
We're going to give you a key number about the future National Coast Guard Museum, and that number is 5.
There are 5 themed storylines: lifesavers around the globe, enforcers on the seas, defenders of our nation, champions of commerce, and protectors of the environment.
The exhibits and galleries in those storylines will be showcased in a 5-story museum.
And here's our favorite 5. For as little as $5 a month, you can be a plank owner and support construction of the National Coast Guard Museum.
For details on how you can get involved, go to coastguardmuseum.org/out. That's coastguardmuseum.org/OUT.
So the cowslip, we were doing mine ops out at, what do they call it, Giant Killer, south of Virginia Beach with the Navy, just doing training. And they have helicopters that you know, mine sweep and things. And so we were out there and just got done with lunch. And I was the ship swimmer. I was an ET2 by that time. And you know, just got done with lunch, walked on the buoy deck, was looking at all these helicopters flying around. And I'm talking with some of the guys. And the helicopter just falls out of the sky.
Right in the water. Gosh.
I thought I was dreaming. And I was looking at him going, what the heck is that? And then your adrenaline, like you go into like this dream state, you know what I mean? It's like, did that just happen? And that's weird, you know? And then all of a sudden it kicks in all the training you do, you know, do all the drills at the time. And because I was a ship swimmer, I had to get, you know, the dry suit on, you know? And next thing you know it, and you know, they've got me lined up and I'm jumping off the buoy deck. I'm swimming towards where the, you know, there was you know, just like in the movies, like
aircraft goes down.
The dive marker.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Looks like antifreeze. And so I had to swim out to them. And because you're not sure about the debris or the helo, so the cutter didn't get too close, I guess. And when I went in, it was so cold because this was like March. And I just felt like everything was coming up through my throat. I was like, "Whoa, this is cold." And then, but the dry suit works out, and I swam out there. And it was just textbook like training. They had all tethered together, these five guys, and off the aircraft. And you know, when you go through training, you know, and this is what I make a plug for. The training works because it puts you on like autopilot when things are crazy, you know what I mean? And so you just naturally go through the process because you've done it so many times. And so like I swam up and I said, is anybody's back hurt? And you know, like they always, when I'm going through training, I'm going, why do they always want me to ask that first? You know, like you go through the training. Sure enough, the guy goes, my back's hurt, you know? And I'm like, really? Like, you know, it's like, oh, wow. Yeah. You know, and I said, okay, well, you're not supposed to move. Stay stable. We'll take care of you. And, you know, so then I have attention. I know who, man. Anybody else? Oh, my leg hurts. And I said, okay. So then I identified who was injured and who wasn't. And then so I tethered onto him. And then the crew on the cutter pulled me back. And as we pull back, well, now you know how far the buoy deck looks like. It's, you know, 100 feet up there. I mean, you can't. And we can't talk because it's so loud. And the seas were about 5 or 6 foot, or at least they appeared that way to me. So like we're just bouncing all over the place. Well, they had the cargo net down to climb up. And going through training, you know, it's tough to climb up a cargo net that's up against the steel. You know, I mean, it's like, and you can't get your foot in between it. It's hard. I mean, you really gotta concentrate to get up. Although these guys were cold, they were all shivering. They got up that thing quick. The ones that were not injured, I mean, they were up there in no time. And the one guy with the broken, he ended up having a broken leg, but he came up and he's like, "I'm going up." I said, "You may have a broken leg." He's like, "I don't care. I'm cold." He flew up. He flew up there with just his arms. You know, he was like just going up. And then the guy with the back problem, and I'm trying to convince him, like, I'll get a Stokes litter down here to help you. And he's like, no, I got to get out of this water. And when he started coming up, he got just out of the water and to where the middle starts coming around, and then something locked up on him and he just fell back into the water. And like, you know, like everything just went like you can't move anymore, and then he just fell back. And and I mean, there was nothing I could do to convince him not to climb. I mean, they were all, you know, in shock. And you know, it's just, you know, just in that state. Because, I mean, the helicopter sunk and it popped back up. And then it went back down kind of thing when it sunk. And they all scurried out the front window when it popped back up. But so then I'm trying to get him in one of the Stokes slitters. And that was right around the time we went from the Stokes slitter that used to lay on the water fully to where they just had the flotation on the top side by like your shoulders.
Oh, like the one we still have that floats almost straight up and down. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So, you know, we had just transitioned, and we trained on it. I mean, but when you're in 6 foot seas, 5-6 foot seas, I think, I mean, just going to say, I wish maybe we had two of them, like one that floats, you know, but it was so hard to get him in there and try to get the straps while we were getting beat up. And while we were trying to do that, the cargo net is just kind of somewhat floating in the water and then, and not floating. You know, it's like, it's going up and down, because in the water, you're going up and down, you know, 5-6 feet or whatever. So you're going up and down with this cargo net that's floating all around you. And I'm trying to help him. The cargo net drapes over top of me and grabs me by my neck and starts just pulling me out of the water, like 5 feet out of the water, and then slamming me back down as the waves go. And then, so I'm kind of getting choked here. And so I've, you know, you get into one of these little panic stages when you're getting choked. So, and I, you have this knife on your chest. So I'm thinking, I got to cut myself out of here, you know, and I'm trying to, but as I'm getting jerked around so much, I'm not able to grab it. I'm just, it's, so then I go to just trying to get my head out of this as it's jerking me all over the place. And I eventually do. And I thank God that I wasn't able to easily get my knife out, because I probably would just cut myself all up. But then I had to tend to this guy again, and I, it just wasn't working getting him in this Stokes litter. And then so we communicated with the deck force finally, because they can't hear what I'm saying. And they bring the small boat down, and I was hoping that they get it down, and then I could put him in the Stokes litter, you know, with a little help. And then, but he wanted to get in there, so ended up like just pull me in the boat, you know. And so we just bench pressed him and put him in the boat, even though he had some back problems. And I mean, down the road, they all turned out okay. Doc took care of them, but through that whole ordeal, when I was getting dunked, all that dye and that antifreeze, I was like, as I was trying to gasp for air, I was drinking a lot of that. And so when I came out, I'm over there, and they're all tending to all the guys that were, you know, in the aircraft, you know, the guy with the broken leg, the corpsman was helping out, and the guy that had the bad back. And so, next thing you know, that dye started upsetting my stomach, and I go over to the side, and I just started, you know, vomiting. And it just happened to be in the bosun's portal of all places. You know? I was like, I got some crap for that. You know,
oh,
like,
I bet.
Excuse me. You may want to cut that out, but I was like, but he was in good spirits. So later on, I mean, he laughed it out, but he had to give me a hard time for a bit. But that was pretty. That was pretty cool. That one got me on the picture on the Commandant's bulletin. I mean, I hate to say this, because, you know, I'm telling my story, but yeah, it was a cool picture there.
That's an epic case, sir. I mean, that's pretty epic. Did they train you to be the swimmer just organically on the cutter? Like, did you just you didn't go to school or anything, right? They just train you right there on the cutter, same way they do it now.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was, matter of fact, the ensign on board was the guy that trained us. He took us up to Yorktown, and we trained up at Yorktown because we were out of Portsmouth and at the time. And actually, he's Admiral now, Admiral Weimers.
No joke.
So he's the one that trained us. And I don't know where the other guys were on this particular mission, but he had done that. He was a big time swimmer back in high school and at the academy, I think. But
I never knew we had floating Stokes litters at one time, like all floating Stokes litters.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, I think we might need to go back to that. Whoever
I was gonna say, cause that how many students have we watched struggle with that, the way they float now? Yeah. Like, it's almost got to wrap your legs around it and get up real close and personal if you're gonna put somebody in one of them.
Right, and maybe, you know, I mean, personally, I make a plug. The old one was easier. I'm just saying, you know, you can get mad at me all you want, but I can understand the reasoning behind the new one. But maybe if you have both for the different situations, it's one of those things. But I would have preferred to have the one that just laid down in the water instead of the one that just lays upright.
Right.
And but
I just find it funny that we've had that many problems with that the half floating one for so many years. I mean, you know, like from probably one of its first uses where you were out there to now. That's pretty interesting to me. Huh.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, so from there, what about Panama City? What were you like facilities there, or is that like a boat crew job too? How does that work?
Yeah, so it's almost like our MKs. I was part of the station, so I did all the, you know, stunt boat crew and boarding team member. It's just like an MK would. I just had to keep the boats up. The ETs kept the boat up. I also stood OD. I was breaking in coxswain. Just did those kind of things. Everybody was, you know, part of the team. You tried to get in as much as you could, you know, utilize all the resources you had. Master Chief Murphy, who I think was the ONC back then. I mean, there was a lot of cool stuff that happened there too. I mean, but nothing where I particularly went out on a big time rescue. I mean, you know, or usually I was the OD at that unit trying to, I'll make a plug for all the SAR controllers. The one thing that I learned at that unit was to try to visualize the bosun mate or the coxswain and the crew going through the whole SAR case. Like, so, you know, are they going to have enough food, water, you know, if it goes long, you know, trying to think through it, like if you were on the boat. And that's where I learned that they're sending guys out a lot. And, you know, sometimes at the group, when there was groups back then, Mobile, sometimes, you know, the plots, if you didn't do the search coordination back then, they let the stations do that sometimes. You didn't go across the jetties, you know, the whole stuff like that. But, you know, you play it out in your head the best you can when there's downtime, because you're scrambling for a little while. But then you have some times where you can think through, like, okay, what's the next step and that kind of thing. So just to make a plug like that, you know, that'd be one thing there at Panama City. I mean, if you go my long career here, I got like a little story for each one of these, but I can give you one story if you want. You can cut it out later if you want.
We like them all, sir. You give us as many stories as you want to give us. And if we run long, we'll just record you again next time. We'll get you back on the line.
Okay. So, I mean, just a couple things. I mean, and some lessons learned, right? For like, you know, from back then. But what cool story was we had to respond to stowaways on one of these cargo ships. And they pulled into the port there in Panama City. And the XPO, I think his name was Bill White, he said, hey, we got to get all the broomsticks and stuff that we can get and bring them over. We got stowaways. We got to find them. And I didn't know, you know, I was back at the station. I was like, broomsticks? Why we got to get broomsticks? Like, without the brooms. Back then, you know, when you had to screw them in and all. I mean, still have them today. But, I mean, you would get a whole packet of 20 sticks or something. I don't know why, but you'd have a whole bunch. So we had all these broomsticks and got the whole crew together that was left at the station. We went over to the port, and we ended up like chasing these stowaways that came on, you know, they crawled off the vessel and they were on this facility just running around. So we're chasing these guys all over the place, down big tubes and all, just everywhere. And we kind of funneled them into one of these huge warehouses that looked like an aircraft hangar. And then when we opened up the door, it was a mound of cotton that was, I mean, it had to be 3-4 stories high. And it's just unbelievable cotton. And they said, well, they're in here somewhere. They're in that cotton. And I mean, I'm talking, think of a warehouse full of cotton.
Like a literal needle in a haystack, huh?
All the way to, right. All the way to the top, right? And we had to take these poles and just go through and then just poke. So, you know, you have a little search line, and everybody's just trying to climb this mountain of cotton. And I was worried that you would just, like, sink through it and then suffocate, you know. But it was just crazy. And sure enough, as every once in a while, somebody screams out when they get poked, and then we, you know, apprehended all those guys. And I mean, that was a pretty cool story there that I'd never seen nothing like that before.
That's the most random Coast Guard story I've ever heard, I think. Sure. That was pretty good. Like, I had no idea where the broomsticks were going when you mentioned it.
Yeah. I had visions of you chasing them around with the broomsticks, actually.
That's what I was thinking.
Well, we were chasing them around, but I guess they had known that there were already some in there, but then we ended up funneling all the rest of them towards that building. So,
that wasn't somebody's first rodeo. I think if you knew to bring the broomsticks, right. you've been there in that warehouse before. It sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, but I was a little bit late to the game, so I was back at the unit still. You know, I was probably doing ET work or something. I wasn't on the main, you know, boat crew that day. But so I ended up getting involved in that, and then. I'll keep going. Like you said, I'll just keep telling stories here. So another one is back then it was 41s. Okay. So I'm on this crew, and I think the coxswain's name was Boone. So we had to go on the other side of Apalachicola. And so I don't know if you know what station Panama City is, but to get to, I want to say it was like Stone Island or something on the other side by Yankee Town. Like over by their AOR.
Oh, Yankee Town. Yep, I know Yankee Town. Yep.
Yeah. So, what is that island out there? That was where the, you know, our area of responsibility ended, like with Yankee Town. So, yeah. But for us to get over there, it's like an 8-hour, 41 transit. So it was like 8-foot seas that night, raining, hot. You know, so, you know, the windows all fogged up. And so we head out, and we had those old 66 radars where they, you know, it's just the green line going around. I know I'm the ET and I'm the one who repairs it, but back then they weren't as good as the radars nowadays. I'm just saying. And it would just make a squeak, you know, that kind of thing. Just like, are we going to see stuff, you know, on it? And plus, if it's 8-foot seas, right? So we're trying to estimate. Back then, the coxswain, the table was facing aft, so he's not even looking forward, right? And so I'm on the helm, and I think the engineer, might have been a fireman, he was sick and down below, and it was just so muddy, and we had to open the window. You didn't want to because the rain's coming in, but you needed some air. And I'm just trying to keep the windows so you can see out them. And as we're coming around Apalachicola, and you know how it sticks out, right? You know how the point there sticks out. Well, there's a buoy way out there to keep so you go, you know, in good water. And the boatswain goes, "Hey, we should be seeing this buoy here soon, by my calculations." I'm looking, and just as he just got done saying it, it just went like right by the window to my port, and I go, "Yeah, we're right there." You know, I was like, I couldn't even see it; it was that dark, and just thought, you know, the 8-foot sea. So, I mean, thinking back on the risk management now, you know. You go, "Whoa, that was pretty close that we didn't tag that buoy." And but it was just wanted to make that plug on safe navigation. And it took us all night to get it.
You didn't
over
hit
there.
It, sir, so he did it right, I think. It was close, but you didn't hit it. Yeah.
First rule of collision avoidance is don't hit anything.
Yep.
Yeah, he had us right, you know. I mean, he got us just past it. And then, but it took us like more than 10 hours to get over there. And of course we were exhausted by the time we got over there. And back then what they would do is send another crew, call one in, and then they would go by vehicle and meet us over there. And, I think it was called Carabel or something. And then we would change out duties, duty coxswain and the crew. And then I just remember on the way back that, of course, you know, we're all fighting, like, I'm driving the car. No, I'm driving. But we're all tired. And sure enough, I was like, I'm sitting in the backseat because, I don't know, whatever, I lost on the twigs there. But I'm sitting behind talking to the driver. And he falls asleep on the way back. And we go off the road and I wake up, you know, and I go, hey, you know, we get, luckily we didn't, you know, drive off. And I'm giving this as a plug for people. And Captain Kinghorn with the so we told this story to Captain Kinghorn. From that point on, he always sent a duty driver every time. And I just make a – I'm making a safety plug. You know how we talk safety. So just part of that trip. I mean,
you're basically responsible, sir, for the 8 hours, 350-mile rule. That's what it sounds like to me. That's where it came from. We just found the right. Origin story to that rule.
Right. Yeah. And believe me, when I got up to the Office of Boat Forces, we really plugged that one hard. Let me see here. Okay, so Panama City, right? So now I go off to OCS. It's Yorktown, great place. Got to go on the old Mackinac reef laying with the Edmund Fitzgerald. That was pretty cool. But then we get to Group Mayport.
They took you guys all the way up to the Great Lakes for OCS?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We got to sail on the Mackinac all around the Great Lakes.
Huh.
That's cool. And,
and try to learn. It was cold, but it was interesting and fun. And Mackinac broke down a few times too on that trip, so we had to keep limping back to port, and so it definitely needed a new Mackinac.
What do you think, sir?
She was hurting.
What was the biggest, when you went from E to O, and you're at OCS? What was the biggest difference in your mind from the two? Two communities of work.
Oh,
don't say paycheck's not an answer. That's not fair.
No. I mean, I don't know. You got the whole boardroom factor and stuff. It depends, it's just a different world. It's the same as we get farther along, a lot of the traditions are going away. So it's not, how we used to always have, even at Yorktown, they had the different clubs and stuff. And at Portsmouth, they had the different clubs. You had the Cheese Club, you had the Listed Club, but all that starts, as I went farther in my career, it kind of went away. But then again, remember I was a mess cook on the Cherokee, and I served them, the officers, with silver. Everything was in a silver, there was all that stuff. And I don't know, maybe they still do it now, I don't know. I don't think so. I was on the Monroe and not too long ago, and it was a different feeling. It's just so it's different now probably than it was back then. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. Yes, sir.
And, but I just knew as a young ensign, I always was saying, I can't wait till I make lieutenant because then I can retire and then I'll have the biggest kahunas, because, what I say means, I can voice my opinion a little bit more, on certain things. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but if you were a chief first class, you could say what's on your mind. You know what I mean?
When you made lieutenant, did you realize it really
up for all this discussion? But I'm just telling it like I feel it.
When you made lieutenant, did you realize it really that really doesn't happen until you make 05?
No, just
kidding.
It does.
I'm kidding, sir. I'm kidding.
No. I mean, I wasn't going to trip off the line and then lose my retirement. But once I had my, But by that time, I was at station. Cape May, and and you know, it's just funny. Like the BM1 there goes, so what makes you have the ability to become the CO here? You know, it was like my first day. The BM1 already coming.
Oh wow, man! Called you out right away, sir. That took no time.
Yeah. My first day, my first meeting is like, I said, I don't know. The Coast Guard told me that I'm going to be here, and this is what I'm going to do. I think my record stands for itself, but I'll tell you a little bit about myself. And but it was funny how he was already asking like that, you know, with, you know, Kate May, guy from Philly, you know, it was pretty fun. And then we became close, tight friends after that. You know what I mean? It's funny how it all evolves. But
first command tour, sir? We've got a lot more of this episode to go, and we'll get right back to it after this short ad from our sponsor.
One to check out is the Always Ready Collective, delivering art by and for daring fighters of the sea with their maritime-focused tattoo flash, pinups, and propaganda. Visit them on Facebook, Etsy, Instagram, and at alwaysreadycollective.com.
Oh, it was great. It was challenging. It's it's when you become a CO and you learn for the first time, or ONC, I mean, same thing. It's not so much black and white sometimes as it's gray, and you're the last person, you know, on that. You got to make a decision, like the buck stops here kind of thing. So, and you got to look at the big picture all the time. So, where sometimes you can just, get the work done and move it forward, but everything stops at you. So you got to really evaluate and look at things that come your way. I mean, I know that's real general, but I'd have to go down a lot of scenarios to explain it. But yeah, that's the big difference is once you become the commanding officer or officer in charge, there's a lot of weight there. I mean, and the challenge and everything, it's you want it, you know, and it's great, and it's just you want to challenge yourself in your career, so that's what, you know, and it is challenging because you don't even know what's going to happen to you. I mean, this is a little bit of advice I give to people. Something's going to happen to you in your position, in your leadership position. It doesn't even have to be CO or ONC, but usually at those levels, it's going to happen to you. And what the Coast Guard has built you up and trained you to be is to take action when you are faced with those issues, those things that come up that are challenging. And I think that's and it's going to happen. I can't tell you what's going to happen, but something significant is going to happen at various levels. I mean, you know, you could lose a person at your unit. Just a vessel has a bad mishap. Something is going to happen usually. And you just have to respond. It's how you respond at the end of the day. And I think that's the big thing about being the CO that, you know, was meaningful and in the relationships. But we have great relationships at all levels. But yeah, preparing for this, I was thinking back of a lot of guys and gals at men, women at Cape May, and I just joined Facebook not too long ago, so I get to see a lot of those folks, you know, and what they're up to.
See, Bill, even he has a Facebook.
I do not have a Facebook.
No book of faces. That's how I found Commander again. I found him on Facebook.
Well.
Exactly.
I guess I'm missing out, Phil.
I'm telling you, man. Yeah. It's the way, you know.
Right. Well, I mean, I worried about all the other things because, you know, when I was at the MIFPU, I mean, I had to worry about, you know, all the security stuff involved with that. So I tried to stay away through a lot of that period. So, but now that I'm retired and I felt like I could get back, I could, you know, do all the social media stuff that I avoided and,
Well, sir,
so it's great to see people.
I'd ask you, what was your most challenging either like case or personnel scenario or whatever when you were in command of Station Cape May? Because that's, I mean, that's a high visibility station, you know, being with her.
Oh, God.
Yeah, being with.
There's personnel wise, like, you know, I mean, what, I mean, there's some tough ones. Like, I won't say, I mean, you know, it's personnel wise. So then you go down the rabbit hole
right.
of, it's somebody involved, but, we had to, remove folks from the Coast Guard. Yeah, that was pretty tough. I mean, for some instances, those people wouldn't, be removed today because policy has changed.
Right.
You know, think about that, you know, so it makes it tough. The toughest one, there was somebody, you know, may have had a medical issue that, you know, had to depart the Coast Guard earlier than they wanted to. That was a tough one where, you know, heartfelt, tough, and they were like one of the best people, like a hero within the Coast Guard. I'm talking saved lots of people and did lots of great things. The Coast Guard had to leave early, and it was heartbreaking to have that person leave the Coast Guard, you know, due to medical. And so that was a tough one.
Yeah, that's always tough. I've definitely seen that before. I'm sure a lot of us seen that in the career. That's
it always sucks when it's the good people that have to leave early.
Yeah, and the guys that don't want to go, you know, like that shouldn't go. Like, you want them to stick around.
Yeah, you know, big time. But you know, they're doing, from what I've seen now on social media, you know, come across.
It all worked out
fine.
Good. Yeah,
they're doing fine somewhere in the world, and so that's the good thing. And but they just couldn't go on worldwide assignment at the time, you know. So, you know, Coast Guard made a decision, you know, but you know, it's just heartbreaking. And then, that's cool. I mean, those are tough ones. The personnel stuff. Yeah. Like that. You know, they're the tough ones. Cause sometimes they get emotional. Right. And, you gotta be professional, work through it. Let's see here. Where are we at now?
We're at your role, sir, in the 29 RBS 2. Just because we said we were going to bring it up. We had to bring it up, sir. Come on.
You couldn't wait, right?
No, couldn't wait.
How could you do that to us, sir?
Are you blaming me for it? Come on now.
I'm just messing around.
Right.
Hey, for anybody that doesn't know, you know, obviously Bill and I both worked for Commander Love, and it was just like a topic that came up pretty often, so we like to harass him about it.
Okay. So I was a platform manager when I got to the Office of Boat Forces for shore boats, so the 25 RBS was part of my portfolio, I guess. And there's a variety of boats. I mean, there was other officers there that worked for me for the shore side, but the RBS was one of the vessels, you know, there, and its life cycle was coming to an end, and we had to go get a new RBS, right, or at least get one on the books so we could purchase something. And I'm trying to tiptoe around this because there are acquisition rules and stuff with this, but I was going to be the platform manager for that vessel, and I can tell you about, you know, why the design is kind of like it is, you know, with the specs. But basically, there was a, we were trying to come to, was it going to be a closed cabin or was it going to be an open cabin? Because a lot of people liked the old 23 safe boat. I mean, that was the one talked about so much.
21 Zodiacs, all those,
you know,
feel the wind like in your hair.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, like when you do a boarding, you had like that platform. It's like almost having a desk you could write on, like the 23, and then there's also you had the 25 and the 27, and 27 rode pretty good, and then eventually the 33s, right? And then and some people liked the closed cabin. So basically, people up north, I'm sure they loved the closed cabin, and the people down south. So you had like a 50-50 on which way you're going to go, right? So so I was thinking, could we have the best of both worlds, and went down that route to where it's got to be kind of closed cabin, keep it warm, but then you need to have, the airflow and stuff to keep it cool and for those long missions and things. And that was put into that consideration. And then plus we were going to make it a little bit bigger, I guess, or a little bit, or just, trying to push towards, it could take the seas better. Cause if you ever rode on the old RBS, before we got the new seats, the mitigating seats, everybody's hitting their heads on the ceiling, and it wasn't a very good ride, and where you knew the 27 rode better or the 33. So we were looking to, take on seas a little bit better. So that was kind of designed into it, and then there was some other stuff. I'll throw some at you that were added to it that is kind of interesting. Is, I don't know if many of you know, but the helmet is on a different side.
Oh yeah,
It's on the wrong side.
So we moved the helmet over, right? And I'll give you some background on that. Is because of we looked at the mishap reports, and what was happening was a lot of the break-ins were always at the helm. Right. And so the coxswain is always like on the port or in the middle, and kind of like a lookout. You're on the starboard, on the right arm,
right,
of the break in. And so the coxswain really, besides verbal and maybe grab the helm and help out, couldn't really get to the throttles to help out like that. And so, that's one of the big reasons why they moved it to the other side. So
that actually makes a lot of sense.
You know, that's the first like coherent answer I've ever heard of that question, sir. That was pretty, that makes sense.
Well, and I was in Yorktown when we first transitioned from the 25s to the 29s. And I know as an instructor, that was actually one of the things we liked about that boat. There weren't a lot, but that was one thing we liked was you could grab the throttles when they were about to slam into the pier and hit the brakes. It was, cause we don't have it's not like the student driver where there's the extra brake on the other side for the instructor. Right. That's what we really need is a second set of throttles. Right.
I'd always sit behind the guy in the back seat and then just pull the kill switch. If it got too crazy, you just rip the kill switch
out. That's a good idea. Yeah.
Well, that's good. I mean, that was a big reason because, I can't remember the exact numbers, but it was like 80% of the mishaps was there was a break-in at the helm, and the coxswain just couldn't, get to it quick enough.
That actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so that was one of the big reasons that, and so we tried to how you play devil's advocate on that, go, okay, on the other side, why is it on the starboard side, and why do you think it's on the starboard side?
Because you're turning that way for nav rolls, collision avoidance.
Yes, because who's the stand on vessel, right? So on the starboard side. And so and back in the day, I guess you had little holes looking out the window, you couldn't see very good. But now we got windows that all the way across the vessel, and so we figured a good lookout would be able to see across everything, with that. So and then if you moved it to a port, the lookout's actually seeing the vessel, right? So so that was kind of that change. What are the other hiccups that
No, that, but, you know, sir, it makes me feel better that at least there was a little thought that went into it, I think, is what, like, you know, I think that's what everybody wants to be reassured of, is just that it wasn't,
Well, it's a question that comes up. So I get challenged on this a bit here and there. Now, I didn't get to stay, so I got transferred to the MIFPU, so I didn't stay through the whole acquisition. So the boat that we have today, you know, I wouldn't have known what boat that was. I didn't actually see it until years later anyways after, you know. But the specs were written a certain way, and I don't – if you look back at all the boats that we've purchased, well, not all of them, but many of the boats, people don't like little things about every boat we purchase, you know, and they all have like some issue that we have to work out the kinks. So, I mean, I can even say like the, I mean, just like the original RBS, right? It used to like leak fuel, and it has that sponge flotation in the hull, and they had some difficulty with that too, like the fuel would get sucked up into that, and we had to take care of that issue. And then, and a lot of people didn't even like how it has those performance fins,
right?
You remember that on the old RBS?
Sure. Yes, sir. Yep.
So you could cut the chine real hard,
So, but if you were going slow, you couldn't take your hand off the wheel because it just wiggled back and forth.
Bill, don't you talk bad about that boat. She's a saint, especially compared to what we're saddled with currently.
Hey, so, you know, so, put me on a 10, B, and I'm happy.
Oh, I know, man. So,
right. Well, so you see, it's just how people – or what people are used to. Like, so the old whalers, they like it skipping as you turn, right?
That's true. That's a good point to make, sir.
And so then RBS, then the next generation grows up with the RBS, the original RBS, and it's a tight turn as you go and everything like that. So they're used to that. And then you go back to more of the way the whaler was, and people aren't used to that. And they go, wow, I don't know. You know, like, so I think it's just what you get used to. And I mean, I even, cause I've had to test boats too in the past. And so I get to hear the feedback on a lot of boats that were tested. And, cause you know, the Coast Guard does a down select. So they purchase a lot of boats and then they do a down select, right?
Right. Like those prototype ones. And then they figure out which one they want to go with for the full acquisition.
Right. Like it goes through a whole process, right? But part of the process is testing it to evaluate, you know, can it perform the way it was spec'd out, if you will, right?
Right.
And so you get coasties from all around to test the boat. And the same thing with RBS, right? So the TPSB, and we'll go Aton, you know, the Tambi, the new Tambi, not the old one. And then the shallow water boat, which was just like the Tambi. So those all had different boat manufacturers that, you know, we purchased with, you know, different specs. And then there would be a down select process. So just so you have some background, it wasn't like the office that picks the, you know, like it's a whole process. It's not just one person or it's a process. So, or at least it was back then. So,
Hey, sir,
I think the boat's a great boat. And I think personally, that's why I always argue the points with you. Like, I think it was designed and,
that's why we like messing with you, sir. Cause boat. Cause the outlooks are different. That's why it's always fun to talk to you about that subject.
Yeah. So I could just see, I'll probably get all beat up, you know, like, how do you,
no,
like,
we won't, we wouldn't let him do that. We won't let him do that, sir.
Yeah. For all those folks out there, you know, that's a good boat. You know, I mean, I've been on it since, and, I think it's a good boat, and it's just what you're accustomed to. So the transition had to happen. So what's going to happen is, and you got a whole new generation of coasties that are driving it, and they'll say, oh, I like this better. And then the next one comes along, and they'll go, I like the old one better, you know.
I'm sure you're 100% right.
Yeah, I mean, I truly feel that way.
Well, you know, and if you think of the 25 when it first came out, the Safe Boat, you know, yes. Like totally new boat for the Coast Guard, speed doubled what, you know, what a 41 would do. It, you know, a lot better ride right. than a 21, 23 Zodiac, and could turn on a dime. I think it just set a really high bar that was kind of hard to meet again. Safe Boat makes a good boat right. for sure. You're the only problem, sir. Right. You brought it up when you first started talking, I think, were those shock mitigating seats. I think as we increased in speed, yeah. we definitely hurt a lot right. of people by not, not having some speed management training for some people to say, hey, maybe we shouldn't be slamming into those waves at 48 knots, you know?
Just, yeah, it's actually possible to stop the throttles before they go the whole way forward.
Right, or just to drive slower sometimes, you know? If you really right. don't have anywhere to be, just drive a little slower.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, yes, I agree with that. Like, it's how you, you know, it's training, it's all of that, what you guys used to do, right? Or you still do. It's all part of that. We got quicker, faster. And it's just, I truly believe it's, you know, you got great, I mean, we have great facilities, great assets. The best. I mean, and we're always trying to make it better. So, I mean, that's my plug. So you got the best of the best, you know, to me. And, you know, we change up and go a different direction, but believe me, a lot of thought was put into it, a lot of engineering expertise. So that's what I can say to combat all the folks that wish they still had the old RBS.
Yeah, I think they'll appreciate, sir, if nothing else, your candid discussion on the boat. I guarantee that.
Oh,
I
know for that's sure, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're always trying to take everybody's input and then try to incorporate it if possible, you know, resources pending, of course.
And Commander, what, if it's 731, I'm just curious, random, like personal question. If 731 needs somebody to test a boat, what unit do they call? Like, who's the first number? Where are the best boat drivers what? According to HQ?
it's not a best, boat unit, a boat driver they could look at. You know, based on what's the vessel designed for and seems to be logistically best as well. You know what I mean? Like, for instance, a shallow water boat, right? That was tested in Chincoteague, okay? Close to headquarters and Baltimore, you know, because that's our engineering, SMEs up there. And so you can go down there and test, and it was shallow water, right? So, I mean, that's a, for instance, I think TMB switched to Baltimore, right? Like Curtis Bay.
Yeah.
And I think it's just cause you know, it's logistically for the engineers to get there and get on it and then improve it by, you know, they just things that come back from the field and then you've got to look at them and then improve those things. And so, you know, make the boat better. And so that's kind of how they figure out or, but then you're saying picking people from around, that's, they call that the parent unit, you know, that usually has those vessels. But what they do is just, so for shallow water, they pick some folks down in the Gulf, you know, cause they got a lot of shallow water there. And that's kind of how that works. The ideal fit, you know, they're with coxswains and sometimes it's just not experienced coxswains. I know on TPSB we had we even had seamen and firemen that had only been in reservists even, you know.
That it, you know, scary.
Because they can well see when you know when they operate, I mean, because that's who operates the boat, right?
I know, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, so you know, they gave great feedback on the little things that matter to the working a deck, you know what I mean? So
right.
Yeah. So that's kind of, you know, Boat Force is a great place. Best, you know.
No, that was good, Commander. Yeah, thanks.
Best office and headquarters. I'll give a plug there. Best office and headquarters. So enjoyed it. Love the people there. They're awesome. I still come in contact. I think I'm going to have a how to throw a get together, like for boat forces. So talk to Jeff Wheeler. I'm trying to get something together for that.
He's still there, I think, right?
I think so. Yeah, I believe so. Mm-hmm. I talked to him a couple months ago.
Was Bosun Norquist was Bosun Norquist there when you were at HQ?
He was, but he was over in I think he was where was he at? He was either on the cutter side or he was with safety.
We gotta get him on the show, Bill, one day. He'd be an interesting one.
Retired.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Right before he retired, I spent some time with him when I retired, and I was cutting trees down with him. So it was great. You know, he's got a side hustle, and I thought I was going to be cutting trees for a living there, but ended up going to SMTC.
you know what I thought you were going to tell us, sir? Whenever you got out, I really thought the baseball batting cages, is that still a thing?
Oh yeah, I thought about that, but what I ended up doing is I'm just building them for the school over here.
Oh okay,
I just do it, you know, and kind of donate my time and some resources that way, and just build them for the local school here, schools. But I thought about it, but things have changed. You know, I want to see my son play baseball more. So if I was stuck in a building all day like that, and all night and all weekend, it'd be tough. But
you deserve the break, by the way. After 34 years, I'd say.
I'm living the dream. Believe me, I'm living the dream.
Well, so then you went to Command MFPU Kings Bay. I know there's security concerns, but can you just talk about maybe the missions of it, and then what you were responsible for there?
Yes, indeed. Nuclear ballistic submarines, protection, and some other submarines too, as well. Yeah, I mean, it's a force. It's funny when we were down there, it started off as a reserve force, but then it transitioned to active duty. And so I was down there. So everybody, and the vessels are, even though they're Coast Guard vessels, they're owned by the Navy. So it's just a little bit, we get forgotten, if you will. Like, you know, is it a reserve team or, you know, a reserve unit. So at that point, I mean, it may not be so much anymore, but back then it was kind of that way. And so it was funny, you know, people didn't even know what the MFPU was. And, but yeah, they do a great mission on, protecting our naval assets down that way. Kings Bay and Bangor on the West Coast. And, so I don't want to talk about too much on that. Yeah, it was just so I don't, you know, shoot myself in the foot.
No, fair enough, sir.
Yeah, understood.
Yeah, so, but, I mean, I don't even want to go down to storytelling. I got some, but I ain't gonna say them, you know. And they're great tour, though. So if you're interested in that, it would be rewarding. That's all I'll say it that way. It was a good duty, and I loved it. And the Navy's great. All those nukes down there, love them, and you know, great friends out of that one. What we got next?
Well, sir, let's ask. We're sitting at about an hour. How about we give us a parting shot, and then we can break, and we can bring you back on sometime.
Okay, that'd be great. Parting shot. I don't know. To wrap it up, how much time I got?
However much you want.
You can cut something out, I guess.
For sure.
I just enjoyed the time with the Coast Guard. Like, you know, I was talking with y'all earlier. Love the Coast Guard. Love the people. You know, bits of advice, like I tried to suck up every moment I had in the Coast Guard as it was coming to an end, because I knew it was coming to an end down in Yorktown. And so you know, just cherish all those moments, you know, with all the people. They've been great. And yeah, the plug, I guess, for Facebook is, you know, I get in the, you know, meet some of the back, you know, get back with some old friends. And like Phil, like, that's how Phil and I just found each other again. And that's my, I guess my parting shot is, you know, I miss all my brothers and sisters in the Coast Guard, and look forward to reuniting with them. And, you know,
as you continue, continue to serve in your day job.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I still now work, you know, I've worked with the Coast Guard, as an independent, testing their stuff, but, which is fun too. And I get to still be around Coasties, and it's great. So I guess that's, I guess how I'll end it this evening. And go Rays. and Brandon Lau.
Well, Commander, we very much appreciate your time, sir. Thank you for sharing your stories tonight with us, and look forward to having you back on sometime. Thanks for being so candid on some of those discussions.
Yeah, thanks, Commander. Appreciate the time.
Yes, and support the National Coast Guard Museum up there in New London.
Are you a plank owner yet, Commander?
I am not yet, but I will be, because I know, Phil, you'll hit me up.
Yeah, we'll definitely hit you up, sir. Hey, we really appreciate it, sir. And if you have anybody, any of those friends that you talk about, any of those names you drop that you want to hand our number out to, feel free. Love to have some of them on.
Okay, I'll check with them and see if they'll do a round with you.
Awesome, sir. Again, really appreciate it. And take care, sir. Let us know if we can ever do anything for you.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
You too.
Before we end this, we want to give a plug for some people and organizations that we believe in.
The Coast Guard Foundation supports the brave men and women of the Coast Guard when they need it the most, providing everything from financial aid to families in crisis to scholarships and playground equipment. As a nonprofit 501c3 charity, they count on our donations to deliver this support. Visit CoastGuardFoundation.org. That's CoastGuardFoundation.org to read about their programs and donate what you can to support those who guard our nation's coast.
Thanks for taking the time to listen.
If you like what this podcast is about and what we delivered, look us up at theyhadtogooout.com or your favorite podcast platform, and like, comment, subscribe, and share so we can keep the momentum up and do bigger things going forward.
Look for a new episode every Sunday. Until then, fair winds and following seas.